Hello, everybody. This is Carolyn Bennett Sullivan from Carolyn's Corner, and happy October. We are officially in the autumn season, which is the season of change, and the earth wanting us to balance ourselves. I'm so excited to have my guest on the line today, David Katzmeier. Hi, David.
Hi, Carolyn.
How's it going today?
Well, it's a bright and beautiful day, and I'm excited to be on your program.
Well, excellent. You know, David, as we move into this new season of autumn, and your whole study is the cycle of energy and time and how cycles and rhythms affect us not only as individuals, but societies, you know, nations. What do you think is going on in the universe right now?
Well, I think what's going on in the universe on many levels is the rotation of seasons. You began at such a wonderful point to talk about the seasons and the cycles of our lives. Just as we have seasons in every year, we can consider that there's stages of development in everything that turns. We have a fractal relationship between a person, a community, a nation, and the world community. And by a fractal relationship, I mean as above, so below, but as here is elsewhere. And what you see on a grand scale, you see in the small. But the same pattern reappears transcending through all levels.
Wow, that's some deep stuff.
But the elements are simple.
Can we take that, can we flesh that out a little bit, you know, piece by piece? You know, the key to me really is, you know, as above, so below, what we believe, you know, in our inner world is what gets expressed in our outer world. Can you expand on that, though, how that, you know, affects us, these cycles affect us in terms of what we see going on, you know, from an international level to a national level, you know, down to the individual level. How is it, you know, you and I have had this conversation that, you know, everything in the universe is energy, but how does it all connect?
That's a great question. How does this affect me? Once we look at the abstract principles of things moving in cycles, and we talk about similarities to motions of some atomic particles with the motions of great bodies in the heavens, we go, yeah, that's really interesting, but I'm late for work. I got to go.
What's it got to do with me, you know, is what I think the question people often ask.
They often do. And when we want to understand, are we having an up day, a down day, an all thumbs day, an irritable day, or are we just feeling great? We don't really know why. It's sometimes because of the rhythms that are going on inside of ourselves. You know, in the 1970s, a theory of biorhythms came out into the popular mass culture and understanding. But the studies of biorhythms go way back early into the 19th centuries with early discoveries from different educators and physicians who were independently discovering the same durations attributed to a physical cycle, same durations attributed to emotional and intellectual cycles. And remarkably, we put them all together and they said, well, we've got physical, emotional, and intellectual elements. And they're running inside of us in cycles with periodicity, meaning that this duration of the cycle is always the same, and we have the theory of biorhythms. Well, what did that mean? Well, it meant that you could simply look on what day you were born and see what is today and calculate how many days have you been alive. That tells you, well, the cycles of each one of these physical, emotional, and intellectual aspects of our being that move between highs and lows are going to be at what stage in their cycle. And so you could see, are you on a physical high, emotional high, intellectual high, or are you low? What does that mean? Well, they go, okay, that's really great. But, you know, we've got to get these widgets moving on the assembly line. Well, that makes a difference. Now, in the field of sports, people began following biorhythms when they were doing training. If they were running track or doing some, you know, gymnastics or something like and competing for the Olympics. They found that when you seek to gain new grounds in what your skills can do, it's better to do it on a physical high. And then when you on a physical low, don't try to set new goals. Don't try to go further. Just maintain the levels that you have. Emotional highs and lows, they're certainly there. And watch out for the crossover days. You might be irritable or tend to break into tears for any little thing. Oh, I dropped the sugar bowl. And then you're going to break into tears. It's only a sugar bowl. You got it at Walmart for $1.49. And and what about intellectual? Well, college students have found that the performance of their students in testing was changing and that the students tend to perform very well about a month apart because from their last really good performance on the testing. Here's what it comes down to. There's a 23-day physical cycle from birth, a 28-day emotional cycle from birth, and a 33-day intellectual cycle from birth. And these are running inside of us all the time. So we began to find out how to plan our sports training, professional events, understanding our moods, knowing that there's a difference between responding to them and reacting to them, and knowing how to engage in intellectual pursuits and academia, because we realize the currents within our own lives. That was the first point. So that was one of the first discoveries, and we were able to build from there.
Well, you know, that is, it's really fascinating to me how it's all so interwoven, and it really makes so much sense that sometimes we're really feeling like we're having an off day, maybe, and yet there's no reason why we can pinpoint it. Like, nothing's different in our lives. We haven't had a challenge show up, you know, and yet it's like, oh my gosh, I'm just having a bad day. I'm feeling irritable. The other question though that I have to ask you is, you know, because of these cycles that we have that are always running within us, what happens when we do have a challenge in our life? And we're trying to move through that challenge and honor our rhythms, but also if we know, let's say, we're going through an emotional cycle where our rhythm is kind of down, how do we shelter ourselves from that, or maybe the better word is to fortify ourselves so we don't stay, you know, stuck in that? Are there ways that we can influence those rhythms to have a more positive outcome?
Simply by understanding that it's the time to be outward, and there's a time to pull up the drawbridge and be inward, and to know that's perfectly normal. We understand mm-hmm. this in the day cycle. When did you ever hear anybody scream at twilight, oh my God, the sun is fading, the earth is going to get cold, we're all going to die? No, you're not. The sun comes up the next morning.
Right.
We all understand that. But if we are having a down week, we don't necessarily say, really, this is the time to be inward. I need to just curl up by the fireplace with a good book. Let it rain outside. I don't care. I'm not going out anyway. And just sort of do this, even if you have to maintain a daily schedule, at least you can do this in your mind and not feel that there's something wrong. You know, neurosis
right.
is a deeply ingrained feeling that you may have, regardless of the impact of daily life, that something is wrong with you. And people can feel that way if they're saying, well, I'm supposed to be happy. I'm successful, just got a new car, job's going well, and everything like that, and I'm feeling kind of dark. But, you know, an emotional low doesn't always make you feel sad. It just makes you less emotive. And to ride the current, an example I like to give. If you were going to sail from New York to London, you wouldn't go in a straight line. You would navigate the ocean currents and the trade winds. You would get there faster and you would get there better. And so it is when we want to navigate the currents of our lives, whether we're understanding the internal rhythms that we have born within us, or if we're trying to look on a grander scale of size and time with the times around us. You see, if you understand one, you've got insight into the other.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and how does you know, spirituality and practices like meditation, you know, figure into all of this? You know, how does that fit into what you have studied with these rhythms?
And meditation. The rise and fall of the popularity of spirituality coincides with a emotional cycle of, pause for effect, the United States, and also a spiritual cycle. Now, what did I just say? We were talking about biorhythms, about the internal rhythms that each of us have from the day we're born. But now I'm talking about what we could call the biorhythms of the United States. Think
right.
of this. You can think of a nation as a person. There have been philosophers that have drawn analogies from this, like Oswald Spengler, who spoke of civilization having stages of a life cycle, from birth, childhood, adolescence, adulthood, senescence, and eventually death. There you're making a comparison between a civilization and a person. Italian philosopher Giovanni Battista also made an analogy between person and a nation, saying there's a character of a people, and there are many, many more. All right, so we've established that connection. But how can a person and a nation be similar? Well, a nation has a mind, it has a heart, and it has a body. And you can, the collective, we are like cells in a great organism when we are part of a country. And that country has a personality and it has a life cycle. And as it goes on, it has biorhythms, as it were, of physical highs and lows, emotional highs and lows, and intellectual highs and lows. But these last on greater scales of time. Larger institutions are slower to change. In short, the America has physical highs and lows with increases and decreases in durable goods, industrial output, the style of energetic disco dancing or Generation X, whether we're being more health conscious and working out or whether we're kicking back and getting overweight. These things all move up and down together with a 28-year physical cycle in America. And the emotional cycle in America influences our aspirations, our hopes and dreams, our speculation and market and investing, whether in the late 19th century we're having the gay 90s, we're coming out with open courtship, or whether it would go down into the turn of the century in the era of the muckrakers in the early 20th, or whether we rise up to the roaring 20s, which was a real blast, but look out for the following Great Depression, yield again to the 50s and the 60s, but down we go again into Generation X, and then up into the spiritual movement of the 90s and turn of the century with the millennials. And here we have a tide of enthusiasm, and the intellectual cycle rises and falls. The literacy rate, the SAT scores rise and fall. That was a 36-year cycle, by the way, emotional. But the 44-year intellectual cycle in America rises and falls and brings up and down SAT scores and innovation and inventiveness, expanding attention to detail, more detailed plots and entertainment even, more intricate melody lines and counterpoint and music, and so forth. And these things rise and fall together. And you have three tides moving, the mind, the heart, and the body of a nation, just as we have them going in each of us. That's what I find exciting.
Wow. You know, that it's so fascinating. I just want to do a quick break. We are on Universal Energy Radio. This is a call-in show. If you would like to call in, the number is 718-664-9124, and I'm talking with David Katzmeier, creator of Kala Rhythms. David, can you, you know, as you've just talked about the cycles of a nation of the United States, for into like what the United States is experiencing now, and how these rhythms are affecting, you know, what we're experiencing as a nation, and then what you see, you know, coming up in the future based on these rhythms?
Yeah, thank you for that question. The United States has its internal rhythms. Every nation in the world has theirs. And we are where we are. Nations can be in different positions. Japan, for instance, when we're on an economic high, they seem to be low, and the reverse is true. When we're kind of going down in the late 80s, they're buying Rockefeller Center. But as we're rising, you know, come around the turn of the century, they have been in decline. And why? Well, because their start point is different than ours. The durations of their cycles are the same length as ours, but it began differently. And so it is for every country. I said that because there's also an even greater scale of cycles that affect the entire world community. They don't last decades long, like the cycles of a nation, and they don't last so many weeks long, like our biorhythms in our bodies. They last for centuries. To ask where we are in the United States right now is to ask where are we in the cycles of the United States, and how are we being affected by the grand cycles of the world.
Right.
I don't want to get too complex, but right now, in the United States, we have actually enjoyed a period of great expansion. We had physical, emotional, and intellectual cycles high. As we came into this new century, we saw highs in all three cycles. Now, right now, the intellectual cycle is still high, but the other two cycles, physical and emotional, are declining. I do see a gentle decline in some things. I see a pulling back. I see a contraction. I see a brief recession in the year 2020. But that's all right. That's a cleaning out period. A great Russian author, Schultz and Knudsen, pointed out that capitalism has a way of cleaning itself out with a downturn, and then it begins a new life as it rises. So that's where we are. We're sort of in a calming down period. The tides are going to continue to decline, but the most noted right now is intellectual. So what that means for us is that we are in also a period of nostalgia. You see, when you come out of a high and you go down into a low, that is when you stop creating new and expanding, and you sort of look back on what you've done. You look back, there's a time for looking forward and a time for looking back, and Americana and nostalgia and review and interest in history is going to increase greatly for the remainder of this decade. And we're going to see it through part of the next decade as well. Strong nostalgia movement and a gentle decline in expansion. So be careful if you're running a business and you're thinking about expanding, expand with caution. Don't get yourself caught in growth-dependent returns. Just invest wiser, not greater. So that's the United States. Do you want me to comment on the world cycles as well?
Yes, absolutely, because I want to hear what's going on in the world cycles and then really bringing it all together as to how it's, you know, all interrelated.
Okay, that's where we are right now. And when you ask about the position of cycles for a nation in the world community, as compared to the cycles influencing all of the world at once, it's kind of like looking at waves on a rising or falling tide. The nations are feeling the waves, the world is feeling the tide. And so you put the context of the waves of your nation with the tide you're on. That's the world cycles. So in the world cycles, I'll cut to the chase. The machine age is over. That doesn't mean it turns off like a light switch and the machines stop working. But what it means is we have moved away from the behemoth, centralized mass production factories of putting out like products, putting out like media, where there used to be Time, Life, and Newsweek were the big three, by putting out like TV stations. It used to be ABC, CBS, and NBC. That was it. And a little bit of PBS. And now we're just have a network of things. We're moving away from the hierarchy flowchart model of business. Now the world is flat. Now we have a free-flowing exchange across open boundaries, and companies are fragmented all over the world. They produce one place, they sell in another place. Parts are made somewhere, assembled somewhere else, shipped to another place, sold another place. We are becoming a virtual world. Why is that? The physical high of the 1900s and the 1800s gave us the Industrial Revolution, the machine age. That was a physical thing. Machine, might makes right. keep the trains running on time. That's physical power. But that cycle has crossed low in the latter part of the 20th century and is declining.
Mm-hmm.
And as we look back, and that's when we look back on what we've done with review and reform, we're going to spend more time cleaning up the industrial mess than we are expanding it. Enter the alternatives. What about the other two cycles in the world, the emotional and the intellectual? They're both just crossed up high. What is not as quite as evident in this transitional period is that we're entering into a new age of romanticism and a new age of reason that is going to last throughout this century, the next century, and part of the one beyond that. But
wow.
The keywords, Carolyn, is that it just began. You see, to begin, you have to cross the middle point between low to high. And you cross the middle point between low to high and high to low, that's when you have a crisis. We had an emotional and intellectual crisis happen simultaneously in the world from 2000 to 2012. And emotion controls religion. That's when we had 9/11, Islamic Jihad.
Right.
But we're also having an Arab Spring. We're having an emancipation from gender slavery. And things are just becoming all in upheaval, turning up. This is all emotional in the intellectual cycle. That's also in transition at the same time, of all coincidences, that it affects commerce and trade. And we had the financial collapse of 2008 when Lehman Brothers, other big companies were falling apart. We had the mortgage savings and loans debacle. Houses went underwater. And this was an international trend. The entire government of Iceland was collapsed and replaced because of this debacle. This was affecting everyone everywhere. I gave you a lot at one time, but I'm telling you that we are in the birth pangs of a new era, a new age of reason, a new age of romanticism. You have to go through the birth pangs to get there, but it is the prelude to times that are much more peaceful, less destructive, and more creative than the times from which we come, our parents come, and the grandparents of our grandparents knew. That's what I'm excited
wow. about. So the chaos that we're continuing to see in the world, because there still is a lot of upheaval and chaos occurring, this is all part of the birth pangs, then,
yes.
of this new age that's coming in. Tell me a little bit more about this new age, this age of romanticism and you know, reason. What is that going to bring? What are we going to be experiencing, you know, from an individual level, you know, on up to, you know, the entire earth? How is that going to affect us, and what kind of changes will we most likely see because of this?
We started the machine age as we were building machines to serve us. We wound up serving, mm-hmm. serving the assembly lines, running the rat race, being part of the city system, and so forth. What we're going to do now is focus a little less on what we can do without reason and blind ambition. And we're going to think a little more wisely about what we want to do. We have people mm-hmm. that are forming communities more than living in row homes because it's near the factory, not even knowing the person who lives next door. We're becoming more social. We're becoming more community-oriented because we're choosing things with a little bit more emotional intelligence, a little bit more care and compassion, and not just focusing on power and dominance. With the rise of the emotional cycle, which is just now becoming high in the world after we were rising up out of a low in the Victorian era and the repressive times from before, we are seeing a rise in feminine energy. Hence, the empowerment of women, but empowerment's a wrong word. We're having a rise of feminine energy. We're having, the world is not gray anymore. It has color. And we're... Mm-hmm. going to see this in a greater expression of how we build our cities, of how we make works of art. And we're going to start putting emphasis on the family more instead of having families torn apart by the Industrial Revolution. That's a lot. And the music, you're going to hear it in the music. The last time the emotional cycle was high, it was known as the Romantic Era. Well, that was a fitting name. Now, the last time the intellectual cycle was high, it came up out of a low and brought us out of the Dark Ages. And we, as it was rising, we had the Renaissance, and it peaked during the Baroque era. And that's when we had musicians like Handel and Bach. We had very elaborate architecture with Ionian scrolls at the top of pillars, very elaborate dress, even as people wearing, and the intricacies of artworks and music and everything else that we had were very detailed, very elaborate, and you had Descartes and so forth with the philosophies, on and on, great mathematicians. So what I'm saying is that we're going to be a little bit smarter, but because of the emotional cycle rising too, we're also going to be a little wiser. In other words, we're not going to just be aggressive and not, we're not going to let ambition outrun our sense and not care. That's mm-hmm. where we're coming from. We're going to have a different world, and the landscape is going to be quite different than now.
So do you see us really, I mean, the shift that I'm seeing in consciousness that's occurring, you know, within the United States and within the world, I see that on in a lot of the, you know, more spiritually minded groups that I'm involved with, really with this idea of creating a world that works for everyone. Is that part of what you're saying, where people are making decisions not just based on what they want, their outcome, but on the impact of everyone?
No, it's all about me. Hey, wait a minute. Get those machines running out. Excuse me a minute. I need the time is money, don't you know? Oh, wait a minute, Karen. Let me check my watch. It's 2014. Oh, I'm sorry. I overslept. I thought it was still the middle of the 20th century. Okay. I'm sorry. Back to your question. Why, yes. Yes, we are. So, absolutely, we're going to be more community-oriented and more interactive. And the spirit of rugged individualism, that has wonderful benefits. And there's very good things about individualism. Duns Scotus and other philosophers talked about the principle of individuation, and you cannot have a complete absence of that. But the trend now that you're seeing in everything is to go from individual to group and groups mm-hmm. of groups. And we're coalescing behind new standards. And those standards are group-oriented. We're seeing this in everything from insurance groups and we're seeing it in politics. We're seeing this in how college curriculums are being run. We're seeing this basically all over in the world. So you're seeing new standards and community over rugged individualism of the 19th and 20th centuries. That's a key element.
So what you're saying is as we come back to a greater sense of community, are we going to see this also in, you know, in the working environment in terms of corporations, you know, corporations becoming more family friendly, corporations, you know, having people work as groups as opposed to, you know, individuals sitting in a cubicle. Are those things shifting as well?
Yes, and the roles of the people are going to be a little less rigid. They're going to have job descriptions and boundaries that have a tendency to exist. This as you have states of matter that have a tendency to exist in quantum physics, you're going to realize that this understanding of that part of nature is going to be played in how we function as parts of a system. So this goes back to the military flowchart of a hierarchy, you know, general, couple majors, captains, and lieutenants, sergeants. And you imagine all these greater and greater lines under each one of those branching out. You've seen flowcharts. Well, that's how businesses were run.
Mm-hmm.
But the sunrise, that's sunset businesses, but sunrise businesses have an interactive way where a person in any position could go and communicate with a person of any other position. And I prefer to call that a polycephalous network, where there really isn't so much just a strict head, but you have nodes of that can interconnect with Owens. You can think of it as a model of a molecule. We have lines connecting nodes to other nodes to other nodes and so forth. So we're moving a little bit more in that direction. Cooperation rather than power and dominance will be a major factor in our business models.
Wow. And you know what, for me personally, what a great shift. I know that the years that I spent in corporate America, I had some sales directors that really were followed the dominant model of, you know, fear and intimidation. And,
yeah.
You know, it's really a self-defeating model. And it's so much, you know, I think when we shift that model to one of cooperation and less of competition, it really creates more of a win-win for everybody. It's not, you know, I win and you lose. It's everybody can win under this model. Everybody can benefit under this model.
You get more with a little pull than a lot of push. But that model worked time where you had a zero-sum game. It was always competition. It was, you know, rule, the roost. And everything. But now that the times are shifting and we're departing away from that, you know, we're moving away from this sort of slavery mentality into, you know, having a system, loyalty counts more than fear in an emotional high.
Right.
Fear can count more than loyalty in a physical high. So there's the sunset and there's the sunrise at the same time. We're in the transitional period, but we just are now, you're seeing wars and fighting all over the world right now, but relatively throughout the remainder of the century, as we get away from the echo of these birth pangs and this transitional crisis, as cycles break high again, you're going to see fewer wars than we saw in the last two centuries, not the elimination of it, just fewer. But it's all part of the power shifts because you have to shuffle the deck to deal a new hand, and that's where we are.
Right. And speaking of power shifts, you know, I think, you know, how are these rhythms going to change, you know, the power shifts that we have seen in the world and in the country, in the United States, you know, especially economically. There is a very small population, like less than 1%, that control the majority of the wealth in this country and in the world. Are we going to see shifts in that as well, where, you know, the old guard, you know, some of that begins to crumble, and where there is more, you know, the opportunity for expansive wealth for more people, and you know, the resolving some of the issues like poverty or lack of food in many, you know, third world countries. Are we going to see changes with that as well, with this changing, you know, rhythm that's occurring worldwide?
Yes. We're not going to see a solution to all of our problems. We're not going to see miraculous things per se, but we are going to see a change. We're going to see that the old guard will continue to lose power. They've lost more than you know, while new people are gaining more power than you know. But the fact of the matter is, the old guard is still trying to hang on with everything that it has, trying to suppress solar energy, which is going to have an economics all of its own. The old guard is trying to hold on to the old banking system. The old guard is trying to control what the masses consume if they're the provider. But the alternatives are becoming overwhelming because of the rising tide. Now, in terms of world changes, political changes, and economic changes, as different cycles rise and fall, different cycles are high or low at a particular time, that also means that different parts of the world become the center of power as power shifts. Mm-hmm. The United States rose and became a world power during the physical high because we have a great deal of physical strength as a nation. But
right.
There's a time when the strong will lead, a time when the spirited will lead, and a time when the smart will lead. Well, now, might makes right is not so much the source of all power. Now we're building with loyalty. We're building with smart Asia. It's been observed that there's about a 500-year shift between East and West, and Asia rises and falls with that. And Asia will continue to rise. And we all know that China is a great power. We all know that they're going to be a great power, and we're all right. Don't underestimate India. India has been overlooked by much of the West, but India mm-hmm. is rising to great power again because of the emotional cycle. So you're going to see the United States not the leader of the world. We will still be a great power. But remember, every country in Europe at one time was a world power. We're going the way of Britain.
Right.
That's how we're changing. Yeah.
And as you were saying that, that's what I was thinking. We're going to go the way of Britain and some of the other European countries. And how do you think, you know, with the rise in China and India, how do you think that is going to affect us culturally?
We are going to not be as insular as we were.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that world news meant what's happening to the United States or what's happening in any other part of the world that affects us. But people's attention are not just focused on just our own nation here in this country. The citizens that I talk to here are more interested in what's happening everywhere in the world. They really care more about what's happening in the world. And where global trends are going to sweep multiple nations at a time, and not just because of products that are being shipped to shores all around the world, but because of the virtual media, because of the internet, because of cultural changes, and you're just going to see sweeping trends and become worldwide. So we're not the driver anymore, but we're going to be passengers on a bus, and the bus is the world.
Okay. That's interesting. Now, another question that I have that's come to mind with the rise in power with China and India, you know, we know China, at least they seem to be in their industrial age right now. How are these rhythms going to affect things like China reducing the amount of air pollution? So the amount of, well, I guess that's my basic question. You know, I know people that have gone over there and said, you know, you can't even breathe. It's the pollution is so bad. Are these cycles going to affect how they do business in terms of their effect on the world in terms of pollution and human rights and, you know, all those things that are, I think, a concern to a lot of Americans, you know, around some of their policies and procedures.
They might be one of the leaders in it. One of the ways that they were able to push ahead as the sleeping dragon awakens is by following our models and imitating our technology, machine age world, and always being at least 20 years behind. But
mm-hmm.
where they're leaping beyond, following the tracks of others, has come into the new world of technology. Their ability to learn existing technologies and assimilate and adapt and invent beyond that is rather startling. And so the rise of intellectualism, bringing the rise of the Orient, means that they are going to leap beyond the polluting industrial methods that they have been following. And we, in some ways, might wind up adapting and following their examples as they do. I have no doubt that the horrendously bad pollution problems that they have created and that the former Soviet Union has created will be cleaned in a rather surprisingly rapid way with great alternatives. Human rights, yes. The Maoist model of China is giving away to free enterprise zones. They prefer that word to capitalism. But both the polarity between communism and capitalism is going to give way to new models. And that's when the competition is going to end. And there's going to be a bit of a unification to new standards. That is not only a political model, but it's also a business model. We're going to see nanotechnology and reforms and cleanup of what has been done, and we're going to find clean and efficient ways to do things, which you're going to see in your lifetime, and it'll be astounding. I have no doubt about that.
Wow.
And the Arab Spring, you spoke about human rights, not only, you know, with everybody being relegated to a tier of peasantry under communist rule, which has been going on and is now being alleviated, but also in the Middle East, where women would be lucky to be second-class citizens. So they're not even rated that high in some repressive, isolated places. Let's not overlook that there's some wonderful places in the Middle East that women have wonderful lives and are not subjugated to gender slavery. But there are places where it does happen, and there and in and some Muslim countries of Africa. So what we're seeing an emancipation of human rights all over the world. And so just as slavery was abated here in America, the forms of slavery and human trafficking and abuse and oppression are going through abatements around the world, and we're going to continue to see that because that's part of the rising tide. And so I'm excited about where we're going.
Yeah, that is, you know, it's really, to me, you know, part of me is saying, well, it's about damn time.
Yeah.
As a woman.
It's about time, time is what it's about.
Yeah, you know, as a woman, and you know, when I read an article or see something on the news and I see what continues to go, you know, go on in other countries, that just, you know, completely boggles my mind as to how oppressed these women are. It's really, it gives me a great sense of relief that, you know, through these rhythms and through the time, things really are changing and they are shifting. And we're really coming to a place of the creation of a better world.
When you see turmoil and crisis and everybody's saying, oh, my God, how terrible it is, that's one of the signs that everything is getting better.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's
no.
And that's so fascinating to me, David, because there are, you know, one of the things that I talk a lot about is fear, and I'm writing a book on how to release fear, and, you know, our society, our media is so fear-based, so, you know, we get this whole Chicken Little syndrome, and yet what's really occurring, like you said, is this birthing. It's actually when we're seeing, you know, all of this chaos going on in the world, what we really ought to be saying to ourselves is, hey, this is great because things are really starting to shift. This is just the birthing pains of what's to come.
Fear is no longer the tool it once was, and the future ain't what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been talking for years recently that there's a paradigm shift coming. But when I heard your lecture at the Trends Breakfast in Wilmington, Delaware, mm-hmm. I heard you actually define what the new paradigm was. And and you did it in detail. You did it in describing how you counsel your clients who are looking to make a shift from what they were doing to what they want to do and so forth. And your description of that was so aligned with the very things that I believe that are happening now in the context of cyclical rhythms underlying our lives, our countries, and our world. So it's here, and it's going to continue. A lot of the things you recognize, a lot of the things that you see moving in good directions are going to continue. A lot of what you see in turmoil and crisis, temporary breakthrough to allow that to happen.
That's you know, it's great news to me. Now I want to get, you know, we've been talking about these rhythms and cycles, but I want to get a little bit more personal with you and ask you, you know, how did you really start doing this work? What was it that you know, sparked your interest? You've been studying this for what, about 27 years now?
Well, it came to me in 1978. I was, and it was like an aha moment.
Wow.
You know, Archimedes jumped up out of his bathtub and rolled down, ran down the village street with a towel wrapped around him, screaming, "Eureka!" And he came up with a great mathematical, philosophical idea. Fortunately, I wasn't in the shower or the bathtub at the time. I was standing, I think, on a balcony somewhere, and it all came to me. I was fascinated by what I was pleased to find out was a very unoriginal concept, that the pattern of everything is in anything. The macrocosm is the microcosm, as the Sufis used to say, like Jalal ad-Din Rumi and so forth. And in so many other places, there's so many examples of this. And then, having learned the theory of biorhythms and realizing that these cycles are moving within us, and then realizing that there's a relationship between a person and a nation and the world community, of course, there's going to be biorhythms in the world. And since then, I began to understand, why are we driving red sports cars in one decade, or a bunch of all cars are black and they all look alike in another decade? Why are we really going crazy in the 60s? Hey, man, it's really cool, let's go to Woodstock. Or we're all becoming yuppies in the 80s and let's go into business. And there's a mass mentality. We have a herd mentality. We are moving in trends. And those trends have predictable rhythms. They're as predictable as the tides of the ocean and the phases of the moon and the seasons of a year. Once we understand the durations of these cycles and how they affect our society, we have a map of time, and we can clockwork it. So what it came to me was, in a moment of realization, that everything is in anything. It reminded me of Blake speaking of seeing the entire universe in a single grain of sand. I realized, understand yourself, understand your nation. They just move on different scales of size and time. That's how it hit me.
Mm-hmm.
Cycles of the world.
And so that hit you back in 1978. And then how did you begin to study all of this and you know, the research that you've done to, you know, gather all this, you know, information and wisdom that you share with people now?
There are librarians in Philadelphia that knew me by name. This was before the internet. And I used to spend a lot of time doing research and documenting. At least the bartenders didn't know my name. I had, greater pursuits. So anyhow, and I studied the stock market for one, because there you had very intricate records of metering daily activity, which shows up in the market, and all cycles show up there. You know, physical high and low, industrial output, emotional high and low, speculation, fear, intellectual high, low, innovation and expansion versus the opposite. And so I started looking at the trends high and low and realizing that these charts going up and down were like sort of one-dimensional meters of what is being influenced by a composite of cycles. And so if you could interpret the influence of numerous cycles being put into something like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you know, going up and down, the most widely followed, not the most accurate, but the most widely followed indicator. And I track each one of the Dow stocks up and down, advance decline lines, put call ratios and so forth, shares sold, what have you. And I had spreadsheets. I used to write it down on pencil, eventually learned how to put it on a computer. And that plus history. And if the theory is true, then when you look at any particular time in history and you look at where are the cycles, if you start from the American Revolution as the beginning of the clockwork of these highs and lows, and then you take any time, maybe look at it in terms of decades, and where are the cycles at that time? Is this really what's happening? Yes, 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 and yes. Okay, a little more. Yes. So I've been looking ahead and saying this is what we should be seeing now and this is what we should see tomorrow. Does it happen? Yes. You can't predict actual events. History doesn't repeat, but it rhymes, said Samuel Clemens.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mark Twain. And so what you have is an influence of energy levels. And are they consistent with that? Do the periods of crisis come precisely when they're due in the area that they're due? And after watching this for decades, I have no doubt that that is true. So watch for that recession in 2020, but it'll be short-lived. Just be careful.
Right. And
things will last.
And the thing that I find all of this so fascinating, but I think it gives us the opportunity to have a collective sigh of relief in that, okay, we know these rhythms exist. We know, just like in our lives, there's rhythms. There's times when our life is going really great. There's times when we have challenges. There's an ebb and flow to life. And the same holds true with our nation and with the entire, world. And it gives us a chance to just go, okay, this is how it is. And we're going to go through these rhythms and cycles, but it never stays there. It always shifts. It always moves. And it always flows if we allow it to do so.
You can use it to your advantage if you know where you are in time. A farmer doesn't
mm-hmm.
plant crops in the fall. A farmer plants in the spring and harvests in the fall because a farmer knows how long a year is, knows when the seasons change. If you understand the seasons of the world in which you live, if you understand the seasons of your nation, if you understand that there is a mind, a heart, and a body to the culture of which you're a part, you can understand how each of those is moving in rhythm as seasons of change, and you will understand the map of time. You know where you're coming from, you know where you are, and you'll know where you're going. It's
mm-hmm.
that simple. Once you
wow.
know.
It's so powerful. We only have about 4 minutes left, David. And, I wanted to find out from you, what you have going on. Where can people find you? Are there places where you're going to be speaking or presenting? So kind of what's up with you and what's going on so that people can find you? And if they want more information about Cal Rhythms and what you do, where they can connect with you and how they can connect with you.
Thank you for that question, Carolyn. People can find out more about Cal Rhythms. It's spelled K-A-L-A rhythms.org. That's kalarhythms.org. Kala with the word rhythms after it. Ka is ancient Egyptian for energy. Kala is Sanskrit for time. Kala rhythms are the changes of energy through time. There's documentation, there's history, there's sine wave charts. You can see where you are in the world. You can see the United States. You can look up a few other countries. There's just all kinds of supportive historical references to show how there's a correlation between events and where the cycles say we should be and should have been and where we're going. You can look ahead as well. This spring of 2015, I'm going to be doing a lecture tour based mostly in New York. There will be some lectures in Wilmington, Delaware, and in Philadelphia. So by going to kalarhythms.org, people can find out where that is and look for upcoming video documentaries that are being produced by my company, The Web Elves, which does web design development at thewebelves.com. We're producing video documentaries to be released after the turn of this year on collarhythms and what they're all about in a nutshell and in detail.
Oh, that is really exciting. And I know that I have heard you speak. You know, we met at the Trends Breakfast in Wilmington, Delaware, and I was really fascinated by what I learned from you. What if there is a group or an organization, though, that would like for you to come speak? Will you travel?
Yes, I will travel. I have traveled. I traveled to Las Vegas a year ago, August, and I have some arrangements coming up and a radio interview and a live presentation that's probably going to take place in Denver and Fort Collins area of Colorado. And so for speaking engagements, yes, I do and will travel. So thank you for that question as well.
Oh, you're welcome. So I'm going to bring it back down because we're down to our last few minutes. Bring it back down to, you know, the individual level here. So as we are moving through these, you know, these rhythms as an individual, what are some tools that we can utilize to really take advantage, but to use these rhythms that are in the best, you know, interest of ourselves and those who we, affect in our day-to-day lives?
Trust your instincts, because you're going to find more and more people around you are doing the same. We're not letting the machines run us anymore. We're in the new paradigm shift. Now, as you trust your instincts, listen to that inner voice of it and your senses and feelings. And to know where we are in the clockwork of change, go to collarhythms.org and look. You can see where the highs and lows of the country are and where they're going right there in a simple, easy-to-follow graph. It's more up-to-date than tomorrow's newspaper, and you begin to recognize it intuitively once you understand what it's about.
Right. And so, you know, utilizing the tools on your website to see where the trends are. So like you said, with us coming into 2020, a short recession, you know, thinking about that maybe as you're doing your financial planning and what you want to invest in or pull out of, you know, what you want to buy and sell. And then, you know, really, you know, becoming, this is one of the things that I teach, really be reconnecting with your true self, with that divine self within you, and trusting that intuition, that internal guidance that is always available to us.
And
you know, coming from that place, which is really, for me, base, instead of coming from the ego, and moving forward in our lives based on that, and knowing that that will always, you know, guide us in the right direction. So I really think that's what you're saying in a nutshell.
I couldn't say it better myself, yes.
Okay, good. Good. Well, we are down to our last few seconds here. David, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It has been a fascinating hour. And I have learned so much just from listening to you and in the conversations that we've had. And I think you are just full of just a wealth of great information for all of us. So I want to thank you. Again, you can find David at callowrhythms.org. You can find me at carolynbennettsullivan.com. And I wish all of you, you know, a day filled with joy and peace and abundance. And thank you so much, David. I really appreciate you being on the call.
Thank you, Carolyn.
All right. We'll talk soon.